Taking a look coming up here at our groundwater supply in Wisconsin. Groundwater is probably Wisconsin's, I guess we'd call it a buried treasure. About 97% of our communities are supplied with their daily water needs, 99% of the water for crop irrigation and sustaining most of our state's rivers and lakes and wetlands. Is there enough of it? We'll talk about that today with Stephen Alice, who's regional drinking water supervisor in the south central region of our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Stephen, good to have you back.
Morning, Larry. Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
And Kevin Masaryk, also back again. Kevin's outreach specialist at the UW-Stevens Point Center for Watershed Science and Education. Kevin, great to see you as well.
You too. It's good to be back.
Is there enough groundwater for all the demands on our supplies? What do you think? Let me turn to Kevin first. Kevin.
Wisconsin's fortunate that we do have a lot of water. But what we've seen is that there's parts of the state that have had issues sustaining water quantity for lakes, rivers, streams, especially when there's demands placed on it by public municipal systems, irrigation wells. It's important that we find that balance between all the water users and protecting those ecosystems.
Yeah. What are some of the threats, Stephen, to our state's groundwater supplies?
I would say certainly land use activities in general. I think that's a big part of it. We need to be aware of what we're putting on the ground surface. I think secondly, some of our expansion in terms of paving roadways and that sort of thing, reducing the amount of recharge. Most of the communities across state are adopting ordinances such that if an area is developed, they've got to address that runoff water and infiltrate it. That water back into the ground surface. So we're moving in that right direction. So I think those are some areas. And as Kevin just alluded to, overuse of water in certain parts of the state can cause little localized problems.
Yeah. By the way, if you'd like to join in with a question or comment, I hope you will. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Get to John in just a minute, but there's a new bill announced yesterday by Senator Mark Miller and Representative Spencer Black, which is kind of intended to provide the means to ensure balanced use of our groundwater supplies. What are those? Let's talk a bit about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I saw the article in the paper. I haven't actually read the bill, but my understanding is it is trying to balance the use, as Kevin just pointed out, between users of the water through a well and what are the effects on local streams, wetlands, that type of thing. Kevin, being from Stevens Point, probably more familiar with an area called the Little Plover River, and that's been an ongoing issue there.
And we talk a lot about the effects on lakes, rivers, and streams, but I think it's important to point out, too, that it's looking at sustainable use for all water users,
yeah.
not just protecting those lakes, rivers, and streams, but protecting those businesses, those industries that use that resource, making sure that they can sustain those industries indefinitely at proper rates.
And I guess the reason the lakes and rivers and streams, if we can see those, and especially in the northern part of the state, northwest, had some problems up there.
It's been really dry in the northwest part of the state, the last several years. And so that's a very obvious thing. The part that you don't hear about are people whose wells dry up because of a local high-capacity well or a municipal well could dry up a nearby well. That's an issue-by-issue problem.
Yeah. Well, let's go to John and Pickett, who's been patiently waiting here. John, hi. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call.
Well, thank you for taking my call this morning, gentlemen. I do live in a little town called Pickett, Wisconsin. It's north of Rosendale, just west of Oshkosh. And some people may have seen in the news that the largest dairy production facility, they call them CAFOs, was recently constructed between Pickett and Rosendale on Highway M. And the total total cattle head count there is going to be 8,000 cows. And they produce an incredible amount of manure, literally tons. And they've started last year and will continue this year as the herd gets bigger of spreading that manure throughout the area. And, covers an incredibly large area. And naturally, we've all been concerned and been very active in confronting that because there's been reports of problems in Fond du Lac County, up in the Freedom area. I'm sure people have seen in the news over in Manitowoc County. And those herds aren't anywhere near as big as the one that was recently built in Rosendale. So I'm just wondering how you felt about that. The DNR has looked at it, but they've continued to okay any permits that this organization has requested. I'll get off here and just listen to your response.
All right. Thanks, John, for calling. Appreciate it. Stephen Alice?
Yeah, I'm not very familiar with the situation, the direct situation in Rosendale, but all of the CAFOs, when they are permitted, they do need to have the acreage needed to spread the manure that will be generated by those cows. So in that situation, again, I'm not familiar with the specifics, but I would be fairly certain that Rosendale is contracted with landowners to be able to spread the manure, and the manure's spreading rates are also part of what's being regulated. I will also say, though, that we do have a number of instances, unfortunately, every year where manure does get into people's wells. And just as a precaution across the state, if somebody is aware that they turn on their water and it all of a sudden is turned brown, has an odor, has a manure smell, we would strongly recommend you discontinue using that water, go to a bottled water source, and call the local DNR office. We would like to come out and see if we can confirm that, in fact, it is manure. And if it is manure, you may be eligible for what's called the Well Compensation Fund. There are some income limits on who is eligible for the Well Comp Fund. But one of the criteria that does allow eligibility for the Well Compensation Fund is a well that's been affected by animal manure.
Okay. And Kevin, you want to add to that?
Yeah, just touching upon the issue of, you know, dairy and the spreadable acres, it is important to point out that there are parts of the state, Brown County is one of them, where the amount of cows is approaching the limit for that landscape to accept manure spreading. And it's something that we have to confront eventually is this issue of how many acres do you need to spread the waste, and do we have enough? Because there's going to be a point where, you know, we can't increase the livestock herds without butting up against the edge of that resource.
Or alternative ways to use the manure other than spreading it. I know there are large farms that are doing other things.
There's digesting. One thing it does is it helps capture some of the energy from that manure, but you still are left with a byproduct that something needs to be done with, and that's usually spreading. We don't typically landfill that stuff, that would be the only other option.
Right.
But so we're faced with spreading that
waste. But after the digester or some of the process, you're dealing with a much, much smaller volume, and that's a big advantage. Dane County is proceeding with a digester and a Yahara River watershed near Wanakee.
And so many farmers will be able to use that digester.
Yeah, my understanding in Dane County, I think right now there are 5 who have contracted with it, and I don't know at such point that additional farmers will be able to tap into that.
Okay. All right, thanks again, John, for calling. Appreciate your call. Terry and Abrams, we're on to you next. Hi, Terry.
Yeah, hi, good morning. This is, I'd just like to know what can be done about a farmer where I live here in the area right next to me. He rents the property. He's probably got anywhere from 140 to 160 acres under cultivation of corn. It's never nothing but corn. It's been 10 years in a row of nothing but corn. There's the small Pensauke River here that borders part of this property. You know he's got to be lacing heavy herbicides and fertilizers, especially because corn being such a heavy feeder the way it is, you know, he's not practicing any crop rotation. And how is this going to affect the water here in the area because of the, you know, the chemicals?
All right, let's turn to Kevin.
You bring up a good point. Anytime you're farming the landscape, you know, crops aren't 100% efficient at removing nutrients from the soil. Other chemicals that are being applied, there's a good chance for those things to leach. It's a reality that we see in agricultural regions, and there is a correlation between nitrate levels and agricultural land use. One thing I'll say is that we are working very hard through local land conservation departments, NRCS offices, to really encourage nutrient management, which would kind of help reduce the amount of fertilizer that might be applied. Unfortunately, like I said, there's going to be impacts regardless of how much, sometimes those impacts exceed levels that we feel comfortable with. So I'm afraid I don't have a really excellent answer for you, other than that we're continuing to work on that challenge.
Do you test or can individuals test, do testing of
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah. My recommendation for any private well is an annual bacteria test, a nitrate test, if not annually, at least to the point where you understand what the concentrations in your well are. We have a groundwater standard of 10, and that is set to be protective of a sensitive group of individuals, infants and pregnant women. So if you have, you know, infants, pregnant women in the household, I'd recommend an annual test so you understand what your nitrate levels are. A third test that I recommend is an arsenic test, but then related to the last caller would be an atrazine test. You can have your well tested for atrazine, or there are certain labs that do what's called a triazine scan, where they'll look at different, it's a combination of ag herbicides, and there are groundwater standards for those. So that would be something you could do. If you go to the DNR's webpage, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll find a search feature, and just type in water well testing. That next page that comes up will steer you to a list of labs that will either do bacteria testing or chemical testing.
What about testing? You know, Terry was also kind of talking about the stream or the river. Can an individual do testing on streams or rivers, or does the DNR or anybody do that kind of testing?
I'm not aware of any testing the department does on a regular basis for that. I'm not aware of it.
There are a lot of volunteer monitoring activities going on, different private organizations that have formed around watershed interests or river interests. Those groups do a lot of monitoring, and there are databases available to show, you know, areas where streams have been impacted or where increases in nitrate are being noticed. Mm-hmm. If a private person, you know, wanted to do that, there's certainly labs out there that would do that. But the trick is that, you know, without that research background, those people may be spending money unnecessarily. So it's important that you work with somebody trained to capture the information that you're looking for.
And surface water is much more tricky because it's a point in time.
Yes.
You know, across southern Wisconsin right now, it's raining. It rained well. So there's things that are washing off the landscape, and a data point collected today could be vastly different than a data point collected in June after 10 days of being dry.
Yeah. So it's probably more like an ongoing thing over the course of a year or more.
By researchers that are studying surface water quality.
Yeah. What would be some examples, Kevin, of some organizations that do that sort of thing?
Trying to think off the top of my head. And I'm drawing a blank as to specific. There's one in the – I think there's an organization called Bettering the Branch. It's a branch river in Manitowoc County that's one. There's a river in Portage County, Mill Creek, mm-hmm. That's also got some testing going on. There's a variety of testing going on, but it's – I don't think the information is centralized in a place that's easily accessible, unfortunately.
Stephen Ailes and Kevin Stephen Ailes and Kevin Masaryk, our guest today. Stephen's the regional drinking water supervisor with the DNR in the South Central region. Kevin is outreach specialist at UW-Stevens Point Center for Watershed Science and Education as we talk with them about groundwater awareness and well testing. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls as we talk groundwater and well testing with our two guests, Stephen Ailes and Kevin Masaryk. Margaret in La Crosse been waiting a little while, so let's go there. Hi, Margaret.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Actually, right as I called in, the CAFO issue was on the radio, so I'm going to change my question just a bit.
Okay.
And ask, since water really is, you know, a resource for every citizen in this state, is there any coordination or discussions that go on between DNR and agriculture and health and commerce at the state level to come to some kind of an agreement on environmental principles or developing best practices or how to educate both the consumers and the producers in our food supply to be aware of how important an issue this is? Do we have some group that really heads up Wisconsin's feeling about our great water resource?
Good question. Again, let's turn to Kevin. Kevin?
Excellent question, and in fact, we do. It's called the Wisconsin Groundwater Coordinating Council, and it was established by the legislature, I believe, in 1985. And the purpose of that was to bring together all the different agencies that have responsibilities to and with groundwater. And we meet regularly. At those meetings, we discuss upcoming issues and how best to handle them. We coordinate our educational messages to make sure that all of us are consistent or relatively consistent in describing the problem so that we don't send kind of mixed messages, so that mm-hmm. we're explaining the issue in a way that it's easy for people to understand.
That's great. Are minutes of those meetings or
sure.
Press releases, or how do we find out about what is discussed?
If you go to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources webpage and search for Groundwater Coordinating Council, it should provide a link to the main page for that organization or that group, and all the minutes of those meetings would be available and online. Each year, we also put out what's called the Report to the Legislature, which highlights some of the work that group is doing. And if you have the opportunity, I'd really encourage you to do that.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad to know that this exists, and I hope it's being used.
Thank you very much, Margaret, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Greg and Montchez, we're on to you now. Hi, Greg.
Good morning. This is a great program. I had a couple questions here, and one goes back to the CFOs, which is, it's not really farming anymore. It's kind of factory raising everything. But what I'd like to know is why don't we just mandate that as a first step that all of these CFOs do something like the Crave Brothers farm near Watertown there that has methane digesters and also produces a great deal of energy from cow waste before it is spread on the fields, and then it really knocks down the potential for groundwater pollution, as well as being a great source of clean energy.
Yeah,
they produce a ton of electricity. But then my other question is partially answered by your answer to the previous caller because of the Wisconsin Groundwater Coordinating Council, I guess you said that was?
Correct.
Does the state routinely test wells in given areas for private homeowners at the state's expense for some of these agents? I say that particularly because we have this burgeoning issue here of Monsanto's Roundup Ready crops, which has radically increased the use of Roundup on soils without actually contributing to production very much. And we all have a stake in this. These things are percolating through to the groundwater, and I'm wondering whether in your water test, you can just ask the state to test for all of the the chemicals.
All right, let's turn to our guests.
I'll take the second part of that, which is
Stephen.
The state doesn't do any required testing or have a program set up for testing. Department of Agriculture does some research testing around the state, and I don't know that his example, Roundup, is part of their regular testing program. The Department of Ag does do some testing for different ag inputs, nitrogen, atrazine, those types of compounds. So I don't know specifically whether they have one for Roundup. The Department of Natural Resources does not have a program where we regularly sample private wells. That's part of living in the country. It is your responsibility, if you choose to take it, to sample your water and know what's in it.
And you should be doing that about once a year, you're saying?
Certainly from a bacterial standpoint, that's something I'd recommend people do on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. For the other contaminants, again, once they know what's in there, whether it be nitrate or atrazine or something like that, then less frequent testing is probably needed. In terms of the first question, I'm not in a good position to answer that in terms of mandating a business operation. I don't know the Department of Natural Resources is going to have that authority to tell a business specifically that they have to take a specific process to do with their waste. The farmers will argue it's a vital soil nutrient in the manure, and spreading is a good thing to do for the soil.
Kevin, you want to add to that?
Yeah, just in relation to his question about Roundup, maybe not Roundup in particular, but there is a report by DAGCAP that comes out every couple years looking at some of their research. And it looks at the most common agricultural chemicals found in Wisconsin's groundwater. So if the caller is interested in figuring out which chemicals might be a cause for concern in his area, I'd encourage him to look on DAGCAP's website for ag chemicals in Wisconsin groundwater. And it'll talk about the most common things that we find related to pesticides and herbicides.
All right. Thanks again for calling. Jeff in Presque Isle, turning to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Based on a well installation I witnessed several years ago in my role as a UDC inspector in northwestern Vilas County, I'm wondering what the DNR's current opinion or what creation of regulatory language exists towards open-loop geothermal heating systems that pump thousands of gallons of water per day through heating systems and discharge that same water into a local lake. Specifically, what about the pH content of the minerals coming out of that well, and what about the effects on the aquifers? And I'll take my answer off the air, but my final comment here is, in an area that's been profoundly affected by a lack of precipitation, north central Wisconsin, and major league declining lake levels, not surprising to me, this system has had no effect on that particular lake.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's turn to Stephen Allison.
Yeah, I think what the caller is referring to is what's often referred to as a single-pass geothermal system. Water is pumped out of the ground. It's run through the heat exchanger, and then that water is discharged. In this case, it sounds like it's discharged to a lake. If it's discharged to a lake, I'm reasonably certain that there's going to be some type of discharge permit needed. Depending upon the size of the lake, it may or may not be. But if it's discharged to a surface water body, in all likelihood, some type of discharge permit was needed. With respect to its effect on the aquifer, clearly the department does not encourage, sort of wasting of water. And one would argue this isn't wasting because you're gathering the heat energy out of that water. But for the last several years, I've not seen any single-pass systems go in, at least in the southern part of the state. Pretty much everybody's going to a closed-loop geothermal system where boreholes are drilled deep into the ground and then basically plastic pipe is put into that borehole. And it's then in close contact with the earth so that it's transferring its heat that way rather than the water being pumped out. They're not the most water-efficient systems, clearly. I do think they're still allowed, but I've not just seen many of those, at least in the last several years, in the southern part of the state. I don't know if Kevin's got any experience with them.
No, not really.
We have, and sort of related to this whole business of water use, got a nice email here from someone who lives in Waukesha wondering, when Waukesha residents take a shower or wash clothes, where does the water go after it's used? My first thought is the water is sent down the Fox River after treatment. Wondering about Waukesha and Milwaukee, for that matter.
Well, certainly in Milwaukee, the water is going back to Lake Michigan. Milwaukee gets its water out of Lake Michigan. It's utilized by the city of Milwaukee, goes to the wastewater treatment plant, then is discharged back. I don't know exactly where Waukesha is on the boundary. I know Waukesha County, I think, if you're in the eastern part of the county, you're in the Lake Michigan watershed. In the western part of the county, I'm not so certain you are. So I'm not familiar with the specifics, but it really does have to do generally with your surface water drainage. And in the eastern part of the state, particularly in the Milwaukee area, I think all of Milwaukee County and then just into Waukesha County drains to the east towards Lake Michigan. The western part of the county, all of Dane County, most of Jefferson County, all that is draining to the west, eventually to the Mississippi River.
Carson in southeast Wisconsin wonders if you've covered about radon level testing for wells or groundwater. Are we doing that, Kevin?
Radon in the mm-hmm. home is probably the first thing to look at. A lot of people will monitor the radon levels in their basement. If taking precautions to eliminate indoor radon from basement seepage can't be accomplished, then you might want to look at the well water. But more often than not, it's the radon seeping in through the basement floor than would be, you know, the cause of concern really, generally speaking, doesn't come from the water itself. It's more the seepage from the basement.
Okay, makes sense. Barb in Chippewa Falls, we're on to you now. Hi, Barb.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have lived in the same house here in Chippewa for 33 years. When we first moved here, our water well, which is 50 feet deep, is pH neutral. And we have very sandy soil and, of course, the drought the last few years. But the pH is constantly going down and getting more and more acidic. It's now at 6.4. And I was wondering if you had any ideas why that would be happening.
Okay. Let's turn to Kevin first. For Kevin, you want to?
I'm not sure what the starting point for pH was.
I think it was like 6.9.
Okay, so 6.4 to 6.9, that's a fairly sizable change in pH, and I'm not able to venture a guess why it might be declining, but it does show that it is probably corrosive water. And issues with corrosive water.
What do you mean by corrosive water?
Corrosive water is water that's going to kind of interact negatively with your plumbing, especially if you have metal plumbing like copper. And before 1985, lead was used to join together copper piping. So pH, low pH water or corrosive water that comes in contact with those piping systems can sometimes dissolve some of those metals. And even increase concentrations to unsafe levels. So the issue, you know, I can't explain what's causing the decline in pH, mm-hmm. but if you're looking for ways to help with some of the issues that low pH water causes, they have what they call neutralizer filters,
yeah.
which
yeah,
is going to add.
Yeah, I have one of those.
Is it helping?
Oh, yeah, but when the water company comes out and tests, they always test raw water. That's why I know it's going down.
Yep.
I've had a neutralizer for 20 years at least, but they've had to add more and more alkaline mineral and change the amount and the strength of the mineral to get it back up to, you know, like 7.0 or 7.1.
And most of Wisconsin actually has hard water, so the pH is often greater than 7. Because your well, it sounds like it's installed into a sandy soil,
mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of carbonate minerals for that water when it's traveling through the groundwater to come in contact with. As a result, you're going to have low pH to begin with.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Evie in Hazelhurst, on to you now. Hi, Evie.
Hi. My question is pertaining to the radon in the water.
Yeah.
Should we be testing for radon in our water? And also, what effect, if you did have radon in the water, what effect would that have on you and your home?
Again, I'm not familiar really too much with the issue of radon in water. There are groundwater standards for radium. I would have to go look as to whether there's even a groundwater standard for radon. Do you know, Kevin?
I'm not sure what that standard would be, but again, I'll reiterate the steps to rule out radon in water. And if radon is known to be a cause of concern in your area, the first thing to do really is to test the basement. If you cannot reduce indoor radon in the basement, then you might want to look at the water as the source of radon in the home. But radon really is a gas. So it's dissolved in water. When the water comes out of the shower head or the fixture, that radon comes out of solution and could be a cause for concern. But only look at the water if you are unable to reduce indoor radon in the basement through aeration means.
And I haven't looked in a couple of years, but a couple of years ago, the Department of, used to be Health and Family Services, now I believe they're called Department of Health Services, as part of their indoor air page, has a lot of good information on radon gas. And they probably might touch on the, I haven't looked, I guess, but they might touch on the issue of whether radon in water is a cause for concern or not. So that would be a place to look, Department of Health Services.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Heather in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Larry. Thank you both, or all of you, for the program and for taking my call. And I wanted to say, Larry, it was really good to hear you say, call groundwater Wisconsin's buried treasure. I like that phrasing. I think not a lot of people think of it in that way, and I think we really should. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to touch briefly on the bill that you mentioned earlier, the Groundwater Protection Bill.
Yes.
And say that it is, it was introduced this week, but it's still circulating right now for co-sponsorship. So to anyone who's interested in this issue and wants to see this bill go far, I just wanted to encourage callers to call their legislators and ask them to co-sponsor the Groundwater Protection Bill, because it's going to be a really, you know, big, important piece of legislation, you know, for Wisconsin. And you can, if you know your legislators' numbers, you can just call, or you can call the legislative hotline to get your legislators' numbers. And that's, can I give the number?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, it's 1-800-362-9472. And then you can call that and they'll connect you with your legislator and you can ask them to co-sponsor the Groundwater Protection Bill.
So it's 1-800-362-9472. Why do you like the bill, Heather?
I just think it's absolutely important for us to be thinking about this right now. I mean, when you look in the Southwest and you see the water wars and things that are happening, you know, we're very lucky here to have the amount of groundwater that we do. And I think sometimes we take it for granted just because it's so accessible. But that won't be the case forever. So we need to make sure that we're, you know, properly managing it now so that we have it for future generations.
Yeah. Kevin, you want to make comment?
Yeah, I just want to say I really appreciate that call and reiterate that, you know, Wisconsin in the future, we expect population increases. We expect expansions of industries. And this bill really lays the framework for the sustainable use of that groundwater into the future. Wisconsin's long been proactive in dealing with water issues. And everybody's brought up the point that we're fortunate to have a lot. But if we want to maintain the quality of life in Wisconsin, it's important that we look at how to sustain that resource into the future.
Yeah. Heather, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Mark in Oshkosh, on to you now. Hi, Mark.
Yes, Larry. Thanks for the program this morning. Mm-hmm. In our city, we test our water annually. It seems that most of the elements they test for usually seem to fall in that month of February that they're doing their major testing. Mm-hmm. Because of the frozen ground at that time, I was just wondering how accurate we can rely on those type of tests, and does the state mandate certain dates that certain elements should be tested for.
Are you within the city of Oshkosh?
Yes.
Okay, and each municipality has a regular sampling schedule. So certain, depending upon the different type of parameter, there may be many for bacteria tests, I'm sure they're running daily. Other tests such as metals, VOCs, there's a sampling schedule that's set out. A lot of that sampling schedule will be based on the requirements as well as previous sampling results. So the municipalities do a good job of looking at their situation and trying to really find a problem. They want to know if there's an issue with their water. So I can't speak specifically to sample tests that were done in February, but somebody will have looked at that and made a decision if they have to do one annual test that that's a good time to do it.
Well, I know that one of the elements they test for is atrazine and nitrates, and those levels I would assume would be probably at their lower levels in February. You know, any response on that?
It could sometimes, you know, especially wells that are installed into kind of fractured dolomite rock, we see dramatic changes in nitrate concentrations. But most wells, we actually see fairly consistent results throughout the year. Only in systems that respond very dramatically to to sudden increases in recharge after a large rain. Those are areas where we might expect that nitrate level to fluctuate dramatically, but otherwise, most cases, it remains fairly consistent, especially in a municipal well. I have a feeling that level is not going to change more than a milligram per liter, 2 milligrams per liter throughout the year.
Well, most of our water, I think all of our water is taken in from Lake Winnebago, so it's not a municipal well.
And Lake Winnebago, I know the nitrate levels coming out of there are fairly low.
Mm. Well, thank you.
All right, thank you very much for your call. And Jamie in Hollandtown, on to you. Hi, Jamie.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I really enjoyed the conversation this morning.
Thank you.
My question was, I test water quality on dairy farms to adjust or to, say, change the amount or the product that I sell to clean the dairy systems. And I was wondering why certain parts of the year, like certain pH levels or buffers on that same dairy farm, would change almost drastically on some but none on the others.
Hmm.
What part of the state are you generally working in?
Majority northeast Wisconsin.
I would guess that it probably has as much as anything to do with the construction of the individual wells on the farms that you're looking at. That if one well is shallower and tapping into a different type of soil or rock unit versus a deeper well, I would think that that's going to be the greatest cause for those fluctuations. As Kevin just alluded to, you know, our deeper wells tend to provide a more stable water quality over time. Shallower wells that can respond to heavier rain events, drier periods of time, and land use activities are, I think, more likely to provide the fluctuations that you're looking at. What type of are you looking at? Hardness issues or pH or minerals,
well,
iron?
I test just pretty much for iron, hardness, pH levels, and buffers, so that way I can adjust the chemical use to clean the dairy system. I can adjust which products to each, you know, comparing to each other to see what would best clean the system, you know, how they react with the water itself.
Sure.
Can I ask, do the hardness levels drop after a large rain event or in the spring when you have a lot of recharge?
Yes, they do.
So that's telling me that well is likely responding rather quickly to those recharge events. And surface water infiltration, rainwater, is typically lower in hardness, probably lower in pH. As a result, that's probably what's being reflected in those test results.
Oh, there you have it. Thank you very much for calling in. I want to go to there's a website that we should mention again. It's rather than mention the website, type in what's wrong with my water. If you type in what's wrong with my water, you're going right straight to a DNR website, aren't you, Stephen?
Yeah, and that website was designed to help people self-diagnose problems with their well, whether it be a hardness issue or an iron issue. But that's a good place to start, and from there you can answer a series of questions that will help you narrow down your problem.
So it's just type in what's wrong with my water in your search engine, and that's probably going to be the first thing that pops up. It'll be the DNR website.
The couple of search engines I've used, that's always been the first one that pops up.
Okay, wonderful. And get your water tested if you got a well.
Every year.
Guys, thanks a lot. Appreciate it very much. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Thank you, Larry.
Stephen Alice is Regional Drinking Water Supervisor with the South Central Region of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Kevin Masaryk, Outreach Specialist at the UW-Stevens Point Center for Watershed Science and Education. Lots of things to think about, a few things to worry about, and let's keep our eyes on that water. Let's keep our eyes on it. Coming up, we're going to talk with you about raising sheep and the wonders of wool with a couple of guests, Ray Antonovich of AZ Farms of Oregon and Claire Mikola-Yunis, who is with the Spooner Ag Research Station in Spooner, Wisconsin. Next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.